It's time for In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. Got a question? Call us at 749-B105.
Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Welcome back, Tony.
Oh, thank you, Ernie. Good morning.
Good morning. How was Hotlanta?
It was warm.
Well, it was warm.
Oh, a little warmer than here, as a matter of fact.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so are you just down there goofing off, or were you
actually? Absolutely. That's what I do every year. in January, take it upon myself, just go down there and goof off.
Yeah.
No, it was actually, believe it or not, holiday. We were shopping for the holiday season for this year, later in the year. So that's how far out in advance we do all that stuff.
Yeah.
So you really, unfortunately, we do not have that crystal ball where we can look into it and see what the holiday season brings us.
Yeah.
But it's like I see Christmas pretty often throughout the course of the year, more than I like. But that's okay. That's part of the business.
Oh, yeah. So it was warm down there. Well,
it was.
It is going to be. Now, whatever you do, don't believe in that global warming thing because it's a hoax. Temperatures today are going to be 65. This is the 21st of January. Tomorrow it's going to be 60. Monday it would be 55. 50 again on Tuesday. 55 on Wednesday. And then 48 to probably 50 next Thursday. So, yeah, feels just like winter.
I'm welcoming these temperatures, but I also have a few concerns. And, you know, when I was in Atlanta, too, Ernie, they were already planting pansies.
Wow.
And they were beautiful, and it was like, you know, upper 60s, low 70s, you know, just inching over that 70-degree mark.
Yeah.
And as I saw that, I was thinking to myself, gee, you know, we're in the middle of January.
Right.
We're really only 6 weeks away from, you know, what I call pansy season here in the tri-state area, which is usually around the beginning of March. So I was really getting anxious and excited thinking about that.
Yeah.
And in addition to being at the garden or at the Atlanta market at the America's Mart, I was also hanging out in the gardens. They have a couple of floors with a lot of gardening items. And I was just, you know, taking it all in as best I could and just really getting anxious about the upcoming season. I can't wait. So, you know, and but going back to this weather issue.
Well, apparently that season's here.
It's, well, I like it. Now, however, if it was the norm, that would be great.
Right.
And especially for a lot of plant aficionados or people that would like to try things that they know that our zone's not conducive for that plant's cultural requirements, meaning that, you know, we're like a zone 6 and, you know, some is a zone 6A. Things get readjusted occasionally every few years. And, you know, some plants just don't do well here, maybe a little further south. But with this kind of weather, this is awesome. But There's a flip side to this, and think about it. Do you remember we had those cold polar snaps? It was a few weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
But when you get into that yo-yoing effect, you know, we're where we are temperature-wise today, then all of a sudden in 2 days we're in the teens or single digits or hovering near zero.
Right.
The more often that occurs, the more damage that it can do to some of our plants because our plants will heave up out of the ground. And, you know, the ground's always moving with those temperature fluctuations. And when that crown gets up above the ground, that's when it all happens. And you know, likely the plant's not going to make it.
Right. Yeah, there's going to be some times here where a lot of people are going to start asking questions about what might be poking through their lawn already or their landscape bed throughout the course of the day. We're going to be talking about that. And also our friend Lena from out in Walton sent me a message asking about trees.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, I think if I remember correctly, you say that the best time to prune back those fruit trees and all of that stuff. Flowering trees.
Late winter, yes.
Have some time before you start to do that.
Oh, she has plenty of time.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what about, as warm as the weather is, what if you wanted to plant a new tree? The ground?
Oh, you can certainly do it. Oh, well, right now, it's extremely wet.
The
ground's just mushy. It's soggy. I would advise against planting a tree right now at the moment. You know, it's all in time. If things dry out a little bit, you know, we don't get any more precipitation for a while,
right.
Certainly you can plant. You can plant really anytime the ground is not frozen. And I'm sure when Bob was in last week in my absence, I'm sure he was talking about how busy they still probably are getting things put into the ground. And you know, this kind of weather is really advantageous to landscapers, you know, who are still trying to get jobs done or start jobs along the way. However, and again, this is not the norm. You know, we were just talking about the temperatures a moment ago. You know, there's also another element that comes into play here. And we'll go back to your tree question, but it's a lack of snow sometimes. You know, the white death, as we call it, you know, where the big one's coming. But really, the snow, as it blankets the ground, it provides a buffer.
Right.
And along with that buffer, it's like it helps slow down those temperature fluctuations and transitions as we go from extreme warm to extreme cold. So it's protecting our plant root structures. So there is a benefit to having snow, and there's also there's not a benefit at all because we have a lot of little mishaps and tie-ups on the expressways and roadways.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things here that's going to come into play. I was talking with somebody yesterday. And if I had not heard it from a credible source, I wouldn't really believe it because I've not seen it. A friend of mine was saying, "Hey, I was backing up my truck the other day, and I looked behind it, and I saw a few yellow blooms that had opened up on a forsythia." I'm like, "Whoa!
Wow!
Yeah! So here we go." And some of our bulbs, they're starting to push their little noses up above the soil. And let Mother Nature do her thing. Don't try and do anything heroic.
That's right. Don't panic just yet. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have a lot of ground to cover. Tony's back from Atlanta. We're going to talk a little bit about a couple of things that we shared last week with Bob Bard, our friend from Bob Bard Nursery and Landscape last week. And we need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Early this morning about the weather conditions, and it is not what we're normally accustomed to here in January.
I agree, but I like it. Don't get me wrong.
I'm not upset.
I have a few concerns, and we'll just see how things pan out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've had plenty of moisture, which has really been a benefit in a lot of ways, especially for some trees that have been stressed over the last few years as a result of some of the lack of moisture throughout the summer months. And really our conifers, you know, having ample moisture this time of year instead of getting beaten up by the winter winds, it's been advantageous for those guys as well. But you know, just the mild winter weather that we're experiencing, you know, when it's, like I said, when it's interspersed with these sudden deep freezes and so forth, it creates havoc. And I know we're going to have more cold weather.
You can feel it in your bones.
I can feel it. I can, yes. I can see out there. Because I went to that psychic thing, you know. I forgot what it was called. Something of light. What was it?
Something light.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not Bud Light.
No, not Bud Light. No, not at all. But, you know, and again, you know, the lack of snowfall sometimes, which I totally appreciate. We're sitting pretty clean right now. But there's also a great deal of benefit to that as well, especially during the winter months. Mm. And, you know, most everybody knows that snow acts as an insulator, you know, and it prevents the soil around the plants from getting a little too cold. So that also couples up and plays in hand-to-hand with those who mulch properly throughout the season and late in the fall season to go into the winter months. So all these things really come into play for the overall benefit and health and the endurance of our plants going through the winter months. But the other element here, too, is fruit trees. I really worry about fruit trees. As those buds start to swell a little bit and, you know, show that they're ready to do their thing, this is the kind of weather that's detrimental to our fruit trees, especially peach trees, because they're very sensitive to cold temperatures and so forth. And you lose that bud, that bloom bud, you ultimately end up losing production of fruit. So that's really important. So it's going to be extremely interesting to see how things pan out.
Well, how do you protect them from that? Is there anything you can do? Cover them?
If you can build a conservatory over top of them rather quickly.
That'd be handy, wouldn't it?
That would be very handy, but things would come on definitely sooner than later.
Uh-huh.
At this point, you know, just let it go. Just let Mother Nature do her thing. She's done this before. She's been through this before.
Yeah.
And I found out firsthand, you know, when I was younger, as a homeowner, just to allow things to just go on its own. I've told this story before where it used to be once thought and always talked about that Japanese maples were very vulnerable to cold temperatures and hard freezes, which they are. And that if that ever really occurred, you would more than likely end up losing that tree. And that's the furthest from the truth, because the healthier a tree is, especially with the Japanese maple, it will endure some of those situations. And I had built that goofy looking cover around it years ago. I mean, I'm going way, way back. Mm-hmm. And I just found out it really wasn't worth it after all.
But so you put an awful lot into it.
A lot. Yeah. So that's always interesting. But, you know, a lack of snowfall is not a bad thing. You know, we can say that for sure. Heavy snows, you know, we've had this happen before in the past. Puts a lot of weight on shrubs and mm-hmm. trees and so forth. Sometimes you lose tree branches. You know, you get a sizable buildup of snow on the edge of your roof near the gutters, and it slides off onto some evergreens. It damages some evergreens.
Yeah.
So it's not too bad. And also, you know, there's people when you're shoveling a lot of snow off of the sidewalk or the driveway, we end up piling that on some plant material.
Oh, yeah.
So this is not really, really all that bad, but
yeah.
I do have some concerns, and time will most definitely tell what's going to occur or happen.
Yeah, this is great for us. And especially those of us who like to ride motorcycles, because you get a chance to ride in January, it's not very often, and there'll be a lot of people out on their bikes in the next couple of days. But it's terrible for the guys who make a living at snow removal.
So yeah, it's not. Yeah, that's true.
They're all sitting around watching their equipment just be idle, and that's not good.
I hear you. And speaking of equipment, two things. You know, I got the snowblower this year. So, obviously, you get a snowblower, it's not snowing. So, that's good. Right. So, I'll pat myself on the back. Or it's like taking your umbrella to an event. It definitely will not rain. So, that's how I'm viewing that.
Or washing your car. Then you're
then it will rain.
Guaranteed to rain.
Absolutely. Or there'll be a big bird party over top of it. Yeah. Or a pigeon gathering. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, it's all that stuff. But equipment. Have you taken your mower over yet?
Not yet. No, I haven't had time. But I did clear my path to it, but I need to get it over there. Probably will do that this week. I've been pretty busy here at here and at home.
If I were a betting man, I bet next Saturday this time, if I ask you the same question, you'll say, you know, I haven't gotten to that yet.
No,
this came up and that came up.
No, you're wrong. I'll get it over there, because I don't want to be that guy who takes it over and goes, oh, I got to have it next week. I got people coming over.
That guy.
That guy.
That girl.
You don't want to be Thomas. That guy.
Remember that show? Yeah, That girl, But as a matter of fact, I took mine in, it was 2 weeks ago.
Uh-huh.
And while I was in Atlanta, I got a phone call from the good folks at Bud Herbert Motors and said, hey, your stuff's ready to pick up. So maybe you can pick it up for me while you're over there. and pay for it while you're over there. How's that?
I was going to say that means you'll probably go over there and wind up leaving with a new piece of equipment.
You know, I very well could. When I go over there, I salivate. Great crew of guys. And, you know, they really get things in. They expedite it. And we're talking about our good friends over at Bud Herbert Motors. Mm-hmm. Jim and John, they do a wonderful job over there. Great staff. They don't lollygag, that's for sure, because as soon as you drop something off, typically a few days later, the phone call, hey, it's ready.
Right.
And you can't beat service like that. And I even think, too, Ernie, if I'm not mistaken, is they'll pick up your equipment if necessary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never talk about riding mowers. And that's even just as important as your lawnmower, having the blade sharpened, the air filter changed, getting that nasty old stinky fuel out of the fuel tank, all that good stuff. You know, make sure the tires on your riding mower have adequate tread. You need that traction. Sometimes you're on a hill or a slope. You never know what can occur there.
Mm.
So make sure that everything's where it needs to be, and it's hunky-dory.
So
hunky-dory. Where's the last time you heard that?
It's been a while. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony's back from hot Atlanta, and it feels more like May than it does January. We've been talking about some of the effects that that's going to have on your plants, your bulbs, your trees, and your lawn. But speaking of the lawn, Tony, it is saturated.
Oh,
squishy.
To say the least. I was out on it the other day, just a little bit, picking up limb debris. Apparently, did we have a little bit of rain and
the storm
and
the other night was
really
pretty strong.
Seems like my birch tree likes to just drop limbs when that happens. But I had a lot of stems and branches in the yard. You know, I was picking those up, and as I was picking those up, the ground saturated.
Ooh-wee.
And with knowing that, I really want to put some emphasis on this, especially is dormant seeding, winter seeding your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Refrain from even thinking about it right now. And especially getting out on your lawn, you're going to do more damage than good. You know, you're causing compaction because it's wet.
Right.
It's squishy, so stay off of it. Although I was on it, you know, it's one of the, what's the old saying? Do as I say, not as I do.
No, right, just kidding. Yeah, yeah.
But refrain from getting out on the lawn right now. And also, dormant seeding right now, it's awfully wet. And what typically can happen, and this is why dormant seeding, winter seeding is really important. It can be one of the best things that you do for your lawn, or it can just fall apart. And I remember back in 2009 or 10, a lot of people, they were busy dormant seeding because they were trying to repair things, and it stayed wet that winter. It was prolonged wetness and dampness, and a lot of it didn't occur. It didn't happen. The seed didn't really germinate. It rotted over a period of time.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. Is honestly, if you're a relatively new homeowner and you think, oh, this would be the perfect time to get seed down. It's nice and wet, and I can throw the seed down. It's going to draw down into the soil, but that's not a good idea.
Not at the moment, it's not. And, you know, there's a couple of areas that we had some work done at the garden center, and I want to sow grass seed, but I'm not going to do it quite yet.
Yeah.
And, it's just right now the ground's so wet, it's extremely wet, and prolonged moisture is not good for seed. It'll just sit there, and it can very likely just rot.
Yeah.
You know, you may get some germination, you know, down the road, but not as good as you would if it was just right, or the ground was appropriate enough to do it. You know, dormant seeding can be very beneficial, like I said. The freezing and the thawing cycles, what it does, it just opens up the soil surface and allows for the grass seed to settle in, and making for that ideal soil-to-seed contact. And that's key right there.
Uh-huh.
And this also applies to homeowners whose lawns are very healthy, dense, and thick.
Right.
Think about it. You feel that you have to go out there and overseed. It's not necessary. If your lawn's healthy and in great shape, you don't need to overseed because the seed does not make that soil-to-seed contact. It's very difficult for the grass seed that you're applying or sowing to get down to the soil surface. So you're wasting your time. You're wasting your money. You might get a little bit of action, but not a lot of action. So if your lawn's healthy and so forth, don't even think about it.
Right.
But now is the time, although I'm trying to get you to back off somewhat, still, if you know that you need to do some lawn renovation or a little bit of lawn work or some overseeding, you know, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries and pick up some grass seed and have it when that day, that weekend comes about and the weather's perfect and conducive for you to get out and do it, the timing's perfect, you'll have it there in the garage.
Mm-hmm. You'll be ready.
You'll be ready. And that's what's like really important. And, you know, winter seeding, too, there's some people that really speak highly of it, and there's some that's like, you know, I don't know. I've had more issues than you know, benefits. But think about it. Under natural conditions, seed is typically produced, you know, in the fall, lies dormant over the winter time, ready to germinate in the spring. Dormant seeding mimics nature. So it's not really a bad thing, but we just need all the plan is to be in alignment. Yeah, I say that all
the
time.
The moon in the seventh house. And
exactly.
Jupiter aligns with Mars.
Ooh. Sounds like you were up there getting your palm read with all that good stuff.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new seed that's going to be on the market, and Tony's going to give you the heads up on what you should be looking for. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And I feel like right now I should say, but wait, there's more. If you order right now,
we'll throw this in free. Yeah.
Just pay for separate shipping.
Yeah, I wonder what that shipping's like. How much is that shipping? You're right. See, you get suckered into all those deals.
No. I've learned my lesson after you throw everything out that you buy on one of those things. But it is the time to start thinking about your lawn. And just a few minutes ago, we were talking about winter seeding and trying to avoid the temptation to get out there and do it. Until a little later on. But there, you're going to find there is a new seed coming out on the market, and Tony's got the lowdown.
Yes. You know, I'm really excited about this, too, because, you know, water conservation is really becoming a big thing, especially, you know, just go out west, for example, or down south in Georgia where they had the drought, and all of a sudden, you know, there's water restrictions.
Mm-hmm.
And when those water restrictions are, you know, set forth, people like you like to water your car all the time, you know, there's, you know, where it's not really necessary. That all comes into play and it starts taking away, you know, those available resources. But, you know, our good friends from Central Farm and Garden, they are the producers with proceeds of grass seed that we talk about a lot, a tall fescue called Fine Lawn Elite.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Uh-huh. Well, they've developed this into a lot better product. And nothing's going to change other than the fact that it doesn't need to be watered as often. Okay? It can save you up to, I'm saying, 40% less on your watering. But you still will need to water. I don't want you to take this, you know, incorrectly and think, oh, I don't have to water because it's Fine Lawn. H2O is the name of the new seed. And you're going to find this only at your local garden centers and nurseries here throughout the tri-state area. And just be sure to look for it. You'll probably see, you know, I'm sure that I'm going to carry, and so will some other garden centers, the original Fine Lawn Elite. But we're also investing in Fine Lawn H2O. So I think this is going to be a huge benefit. And there's a lot that goes into, Ernie, testing and defining and saying, hey, that this seed does what we're wanting it to do as far as saving us, you know, on water.
Right.
And there's an organization, it's called TWCA, which is the Turf Grass Water Conservation Alliance. They are the ones that go through the regiment process of testing seed and saying, hey, it truly does do what we're saying that it does. And it's almost a two-year process.
I was just about to say that it's not something they just sat around the table last week and came up with this idea. They've done some research. So
Fine Lawn H2O is one of the most recent releases of TWCA's qualified drought-tolerant tall fescues. And I think that's remarkable to, you know, we need to evolve with these things because the conservation of water is going to become more important.
Oh, sure.
As we progress further into the future. And, you know, just when I'm out in Vegas or I'm there at the dam, Hoover Dam, you can just see the water marks. The water that was once held back by the dam is no longer the same depth that it used to be.
Right.
So water is going to become a huge commodity. Mm-hmm. So I think this is going to be a huge savings. You know, like I said, as demand for water rises, the use of water for non-essential things like you're always using it for, just spraying off the motorcycle and things like that, you know, become scrutinized.
Sure.
You know, people are like pointing the fingers like you're using water unnecessarily. And that even goes into our homes as well. You know, running water at the kitchen sink, if you don't need to, don't do it.
Right.
You know, now I'm not trying to get on that bandwagon by any means, but I think this is a great thing. Fine Lawn H2O. Uses less water, they say less fertilizer, less chemicals. Think about that.
Sure. Nice.
And, you know, when we say less fertilizer, I still want you to stay in that Fertiloom three-step program, but think about those people who are using that four-step, that five-step. You don't need to do that. It's crazy. Right. So still stay within the Fertilin three-step program, all is well. But just think about it. You use less water, up to 40%, less fertilizer, less chemicals, perhaps less mowing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they do throw that element into it. But at the same time, Fine Lawn H2O, it still exhibits exceptional turf quality. It gives you all of that. It's resistant to turf diseases like brown patch. It doesn't stop brown patch, but it's resistant to it, okay? Keep that in mind. Leaf spot, you know, winter brown blight, pythium, those types of diseases that will, you know, plague our lawn sometimes, Fine Lawn H2O is resilient. It's very tough. It's very resistant to those things. So consider that. Look for that, and it's sure. only going to be at your local garden centers and nurseries here in the tri-state area.
And we'll get that information posted on our In and Around the House Facebook page. So you can check that out and get to your local home and garden.
And it has many applications, too. You know, it's not just for lawns. It could be for commercial sites, parks, athletic fields, sod farms. Mm-hmm. You know, that would be a good one, too, to talk with our good friend Turpin Farms. Mm-hmm. So we'll keep this in mind, and we'll talk more about it as we progress through the season. You're just going to get that awesome performance from Fine Lawn H2O.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our friend Bob Bard was with us last week while Tony was in Atlanta, and he had his top mistakes that people make
pertaining
to their landscaping, and we're going to revisit that when we come back. In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be back.
It's time to ask a pro with In and Around the House on B105.
Welcome back In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony's out, and we have Bob Bard, our friend from Bard Nursery and Landscaping, sitting in for him. We've been talking about mistakes that new homeowners or new landscape attempts can be made, and some of them I have made, some of them I have perfected.
We all have.
Exactly.
You know, and it's okay to make mistakes.
It is. That's how we learn.
I always tell my ball team and all my boys, whenever I've coached, it's failing forward.
It is.
So if you learn from your mistakes, then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't, then there's been no point in doing it. So, you know, if you're going to make a mistake playing ball, it's okay to make a mistake playing hard.
Yeah.
But as long as you get better.
Yeah.
That's what I tell them. Whether they believe me or not, I don't know.
I have a great baseball story I'll share with you when we get to the end of the break. It's one of those things that you can't make up.
There's a lot of this.
Oh, my gosh. But we're into the top five.
We are down to the top five. And once again, these aren't necessarily everybody's top five.
Mm-hmm.
But these are the ones that are kind of bigger. I tried to put them in somewhat order based on how people come into the store. So, and we've talked about lack of a plan, which is number five. But what I mean specifically is impulse buying.
Uh-huh.
You know, don't be an impulse buyer. It's really easy to walk into a garden center and go, oh, that's so pretty. I gotta have it. Or that's the coolest thing I've ever seen. I've gotta have it.
Yeah.
You know, you impulse buying as a store owner, we love impulse buying. Buy everything that I put in front of you, please.
Yeah. Yeah.
But truly and honestly, it usually costs people quite a bit of money over the year, impulse buying,
mm-hmm.
you know. And there's some time that's okay, because you get some pretty things or some good deals.
Sure.
But we're not just talking about little flowers. Sometimes they'll buy the $400 Japanese maple specimen.
Yeah.
That's fine if it fits in the plan.
Right.
So have the plan to make sure you're picking the right plants. You're picking the right hardscapes. You're picking the right flowers. And don't be afraid to take time on that plan.
Right.
Don't rush that plan through.
Have a plan before you make the purchase.
It seems like it's the theme of the show.
Yes, have a plan.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what we're doing, but, you know, and when we say the plan, we're not even talking about what you're buying.
Right.
Have the long-term plan. What's the weedy going to be like?
Sure.
What's the maintenance? Are you a person who likes their beds really full? Like, say you have a ground cover that covers the whole bed.
Yeah.
Sometimes weeding ground cover is an absolute pain in the neck.
Oh, I can tell you firsthand. Well, okay, secondhand. Watching my wife do it is really, she hates it. But we love that creeping phlox.
Yes, beautiful.
And how it is for the the first 6 months of the season is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But then when the blooms fall off and then little weeds start creeping in there.
Or a little grass from where somebody mowed and they blew some seeds in, or just some weeds got started, and all of a sudden it just, that beautiful creeping fox turns into a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And the creeping fox, just for those who may not know what it is, that is a ground cover perennial that just covered with flowers early in the spring. So when you look and you see this blanket of white or purple or pink or bubblegum, and there's multiple colors, that is creeping phlox. It's usually falling over a rock or over a retaining wall or in a large planted area.
It's one of my favorites.
It is it's a beautiful plant. I love it, except for when it's not blooming.
That's exactly right.
So, but you have to have that plant. You have to know, am I a person who loves maintenance?
Mm-hmm.
You aren't. You know, maybe your wife is, you know, but you got to know if you're a guy who doesn't like to weed. Maybe spread your plants out a little bit farther so it's a little bit easier to get in there to do some of that maintenance.
Good point.
So,
very good point.
So a lack of a plan. And this is a really big one. This is a mistake a lot of designers make and architects as well. And I'll explain it as we go. But it's having the right size and scale of the landscaping.
The right size and scale.
Now let's everybody's been through, let's back up just a second. Everybody's been to some of these new like restaurants or stores or whatever's popping up all over the place.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you see 40 juniper in a big mass pile for some reason.
Okay.
That's fine sometimes on a commercial landscaping, but on your house, you know, maybe you don't need that big. Maybe you got to make sure it fits the right size of your yard. If you have a postage stamp for a yard, maybe you don't want to fill the whole thing with just mulch and landscaping.
Okay, I got you.
Or if you have a big lawn, and you know, there's a lot of people out there who have acres. It's really nice to sometimes have the trees, but maybe the right size and shape and scale is to put them a little bit closer to the perimeter, so it leaves the property a little more open in the center. So as the trees get larger, it has still an open feel, but it kind of closes you in for the privacy.
Gotcha. Provides shade, windbreak, and not overbearing to the landscape.
Well, and I mean, we all know what trees benefit us in general.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
Carbon monoxide, oxygen. We know all they're the best dust busters in the world.
Sure.
But also planting properly is very important and key to the health of the tree.
Uh-huh.
So getting everything in the right size and scale and making sure your beds are the right size. You know, if you're going to build a bed on the side of the house, make sure it's big enough.
Sure.
Most people put they'll buy a little plant, they'll buy a 2-foot bed, you know, make a bed about 2 feet wide, and then all of a sudden the plant grows too big. So know your scale. That's very important.
Yeah.
So here's number three number three on my list, and it's not using your space properly.
Guilty as charged again.
Yeah.
Are you sure you haven't been watching me?
I have been watching. I think so. I think so. But what's nice is we're all in the boat together.
Yeah.
We've all done this.
Yes, we have.
You know, and as a designer, I've made these mistakes too.
Yeah.
You know,
sure.
Where, you know, especially on my own house, sometimes the scale is out of place. You know, I love so many trees and plants. I just want to put a lot in, but sometimes that's wrong. But going back, use your space properly. If you need, you have a small yard, but you still need a patio, then plan to make that fit accordingly. Are you going to plan for 40 people for a party? Are you planning for you and maybe another couple?
Sure.
So that size, and if you have a small yard, you might have to go with a smaller patio. Maybe you add a little bit of a seat wall or a knee planting wall, something you can use for seating. You know, as opposed to, you know, you just put in a patio and try to use chairs.
Sure.
So, you know, not using your space properly, a lot of people make that mistake. You know, not having some lawn. If you have kids, try to leave some space open for the kids to play.
Important. Very important.
You know, so that's number three. Here's number two, and we have all been guilty of this, and Tony has talked about this a lot on the show, and that is mulching too heavily.
Yeah, not getting the old stuff out, you know. I have to agree with that.
Yeah, that's a big one. And I see this one a lot. You know, volcano mulching around the trees.
Boy.
Oh, it's good for the trees. No, it's horrible for the trees.
Yeah.
It's horrible for the plants to bury them in mulch. It's bad for perennial. It's just bad all the way around. It also invites more termites when all of a sudden you have all this wood just kind of rotting, decay. You know, that's where people have some issues.
Boy, that's
termites
a good,
can
that's
happen
a
anywhere.
Really good point right there.
You know, know,
inviting the insects and the pests.
Yeah. So what's proper? Inch at least, no more than 3. Okay, so 1 to 3 inches is a good mulch. 2 inches would be perfect. Now, why do we do that? We mulch because it keeps weeds down, keeps moisture in the ground. That's the main purpose for mulch. So it really protects the plants. But also, mulch will break down and turn into organic matter if done properly. So you had mentioned, hey, you got to rake your mulch out.
Yeah.
Well, if you're mulching at the right depth, typically over a season or two, that will almost completely decay to where you'll see the bare dirt.
Very good.
And that's actually a good thing. Yeah. So letting it break down just a little bit is good for our plants. Mm-hmm. It's also easier for the lazy gardener. Because you don't have to rake it.
Yeah.
You can just let it break down.
Good idea.
So mulching too heavy. Now, what is the proper type of mulch? You know, we've talked about this before, but, you know, the proper type of mulch, it can vary. It can be pine straw, the pine needles. Have you used that?
We have because we have that hill in the back part of our lawn that we turn into a flower bed that Lisa spends an awful lot of time on. The first season we did it, we put regular black mulch on it. And the second heavy rainfall we had, it was all at the bottom of the hill.
All the way at the bottom.
So we got all that up, and Tony recommended we use pine straw.
Yeah.
That stays in place, perfect for the hillside.
And pine straw is good for the soil.
Mm-hmm.
Very acidic for the soil, which is really nice.
Yeah.
But the answer to that is, what's the best mulch? There really isn't a great answer to, yes, that is the best mulch. A lot of it depends on what you like.
Mm-hmm.
If you like the dark mulch, which is the most popular mulch used, period, you know, that's fine as long as it's done properly. You know, you can use a lot of aggregates or gravel. Now, the key to that is when you put your mulch down, once again, put some weed barrier down. So you're not just to keep the weeds out, but that's to keep the rock from sinking into the mud. So it really doesn't matter what kind of mulch you use, as long as you're using a quality mulch and you're doing it at the right depth.
Very good.
All right, my number one.
The number one.
Planting too close to the house.
Oh, huge mistake.
Now, this is everybody.
Yes.
You go to the store, you buy the 8-foot tall river birch for the corner of the house. I'm just going to use river birch. Yeah. It can happen with anything.
Yeah.
And you plant it about 3 feet from the house because that's where it looks good.
Oh, it's perfect there.
Perfect. Oh, absolutely perfect. At least for a couple of years.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the tree has grown up over the house.
Mm-hmm.
It's growing into the house. Now it's easy for critters to get into your house. Makes an easy access for all of that.
Oh, yeah.
And this is number one. People buy small shrubs and they plant them way too close to the foundation. Or your air conditioning guys. I know we've had some of those guys on. I think it was Arling House that comes on
right.
all the time.
Yeah.
I guarantee you they say people plant way too close to the units outside.
One of the first things they pointed out is they'll get a trouble call and come to the house, and it's just overgrown.
Yes.
With ornamental grasses and stuff.
And that's
like that.
The worst one. But, you know, it happens all the time, and you just can't do that. So this is where sometimes you even got to read more than the labels. Unfortunately, labels are printed for nationwide plants.
Sure.
So this is where you got to do a little research and a little planning. And I'll use an example, boxwood.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Winter Gem boxwood came into our store 3 or 4 years ago, and it had a tag that said it was 2x2. They're 4x4 or even 5x5.
Oh.
So, you know, as soon as people came in, we were like, hey, this is wrong. You know, make sure you plant it properly, because we don't want, you know, you plant a 2x2 thinking you have 2x2, and it's 5x5, that's going to be a problem.
Sure.
But then a lot of people will still buy it anyways, and they'll put it in an area that will fit a 2x2 and think, oh, I can trim it. I can do that.
Yeah.
You better be the best trimmer ever.
And do it in a timely manner.
And you better do it often.
Yeah.
So, you know, planting too close to the house is probably number one.
Gotcha.
It's the biggest mistake everybody makes. I've done it. You've done it.
Yeah.
You know, every gardener's made that mistake.
Sure.
And there's hundreds of more. Hundreds more mistakes.
Oh yeah.
We can all make them, you know.
Yeah. I'm certain I will be. that's how I learn.
Yeah.
I keep trying. That's the most important thing, is to keep trying. Keep making that effort.
Failing forward.
Awesome. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony's out on assignment, and we have Bob from Bard's Nursery and Landscape in the subbing for us. Got a lot of ground to cover. And because we were, I guess, had the threat of an ice storm, we're going to revisit a conversation Tony and I had last week about what is the proper salt or thing to put down on your sidewalk, on your driveway, because weather, overnight temperatures are going to drop again. There's a lot of moisture in the forecast, and this is some information you need. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and going to introduce you to a couple of new plants on a regular basis. And you ever hear anybody describe this as a bromelade?
All the time.
Well, that's looking at the word, that's how I would have said it. Can I have a couple of those bromelades?
Bromelades.
Bromeliad.
And I'll take a swizzle stick with that.
Yeah, And on the rocks. How about that?
Yeah.
The bromeliad. I love this plant. You know, it's a tropical plant. It has such character. And it's often, I had one, a bromeliad, that I had for a number of years, and it's going to be part of our trivia question here just shortly, but I'm going to tell you how I had it for a number of years because it's very, very interesting and very unique to this plant as well.
Okay.
But the bromeliad, it's interesting. It's one of the neatest plants you can have, especially it adapts well to the indoor environments. And it was once thought or believed years ago that it was a very difficult plant for homeowners to take care of. And it was really only for the novice gardeners to purchase. And that is the furthest from the truth. It really is. The bromeliad is an awesome plant. Comes in an array of different textures and colors and various heights and so forth. And there are thousands of species of bromeliads. And you can just go on and on and on, and they fall in different genus categories. But the one that you most commonly see at your local garden centers and nurseries is one called Silver Vase. As a matter of fact, Katie Buckman, she just picked one up the other day. She saw it in our garden center, and she's like, I like that. It's one of the most popular. And the reason why I thought about the bromeliad as a plant of the week, a great conversation piece, is because someone's getting married, and they're looking for something different on the table as a centerpiece. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the suggestions that I had, you know, without you not being able to peer over and talk to the other person on the other side or see around. You know, sometimes they put those big massive shrubs on the table.
Yeah.
And you can't have a conversation with people. But it's different. It's unique. And this is what the younger generation, they gravitate towards, the stuff you don't commonly see.
Right.
But I love the bromeliad. And really, it's a epiphytic, it's an epiphyte type of plant. Do you know what that means?
Plant? Yes, I do.
You do? No, it's an epiphyte.
It's a little thing that grows out of that ground.
It's an epiphyte. And an epiphyte is a plant that grows on another plant, but is not a parasitic type of plant where it's exploiting what it's growing on. So it's friendly, so to speak.
Okay.
So that's an epiphyte. You know, it grows on another plant. It's like an air plant, like a tillandsia or an orchid. You know, we talk about the root systems of orchids, how they, when they reach out, they serve a purpose. You know, they're trying to get moisture from out of the air itself. You know, high humidity levels is perfect. But the bromeliad is a great performer. And you can buy it in a number of different colors, et cetera, et cetera. And just look for them at your local garden centers and nurseries. But what's really interesting about the bromeliad, it relies on rainfall, Ernie, and leaf litter for water and fertilization. So typically the root structures of the bromeliad is exposed, and they have this unique leaf structure that comes down to the center of the plant itself, and that's where the water's captured when it rains. It's a tropical plant. It's in the rainforest. And also leaf litter gets caught into those pockets. That's what feeds, and that's how it drinks its water and gets its nutrients and moisture. Really, really interesting. Now, what else is interesting about the bromeliad is that it's adaptable. We can pot it up in a pot. And if you do so, or if you purchase one, if it's in a plastic pot, which you will see them come in plastic pots, I would go ahead and transplant it into a clay pot. I favor clay way more so than I do plastic. Plastic is inexpensive. Plastic has a benefit of holding moisture a little longer, and plastic is light in weight. But clay, the beauty of clay is it allows the soil to breathe. And if you happen to water sometimes a little too much, it will also help wick away the moisture from the soil. So
it makes perfect sense.
The reason why I'm pointing this out is that the bromeliad does not like to sit in water. Its root structure will decay over time. Okay. So you have to be extremely careful when you're watering the bromeliad. Always use a peat-based soil with about, maybe two-thirds of a peat-based soil with a third of sand, just for that drainage purpose only, because you don't want that root structure of the bromeliad to sit in water. It will be its demise. Quickly, I'm just telling you that. Sometimes I've even gone as far as I really will never water the soil. I'll just put water in the central cup or in the leaf, in those leaf pockets where it meets the central stem, and just allow it to take its moisture
like
that
it would
way.
As if it were in nature.
Absolutely. You're right on.
Ah.
But they need good drainage. They do not like wet feet. And have you ever seen one?
No, I don't
actually,
think
Actually, something we've not really emphasized this morning much at all, but it's on our Facebook page if you want to take a great look at what the bromeliad looks like. I took a photograph of a few just the other day. And the one that you see with the pink bloom, that's in the Echmea family. That's the one that Katie picked up. That pink bloom will also get these little purple, like bluish bloom rosettes in that main bloom. They bloom for a long time. Isn't that cool?
That is nice.
Now, can you see that? Because I know you're colorblind.
Well, I can see it. It's just one of those things where I wouldn't be able to describe that if someone asked me.
Yeah, but it's so cool. And you can see the others where, you have those yellow tips, the burgundy tips, the orange tips. There's even one called Flame Sword. And it's really cool. I've yet to put my hands on one of those here as of recent. But it's a flat bloom, so neat looking. And the foliage is really cool on the bromeliads. But on Flame Sword, it looks like leopard type of pattern.
Right. That's
on
nice.
On the leaf itself.
Mm-hmm.
So really, really cool. Look for these at your local garden centers and nurseries. It's a plant well worth having. Now, part of our trivia question here. And you have some tickets to give away.
I do. As a matter of fact, the Syrian Shrine Circus is coming to BBT Arena on February 3rd, 4th, and 5th. It is a fantastic event. Proceeds from this event help support the Shriners Children's Hospital. We have a family four-pack of tickets if you are the caller with the correct answer to this question.
Okay. This is about the bromeliad. And they offer a great deal of beauty just with their foliage alone. But there's also something else really, really unique about the bromeliad, and that is it is monocarpic. The bromeliad, not all, but most. I need to emphasize that, too, in my research. Not all, but most are monocarpic. What does monocarpic mean?
I'm so glad you didn't ask me, but we're looking for the answer. 749-B105, the first caller with the correct answer to that. Gets a family four-pack of tickets to the Syrian Shrine Circus coming to BBT Arena February 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And I think the tickets are good for the Sunday show. Let me double-check that quick lack of bunny.
Are you still doing the this
Sunday, February 5th?
Are you still doing the show?
Yes, I'll be the ring announcer on that Sunday.
Yeah.
So
Could they hang out with you by chance?
I'll be there.
You can't miss him. He'll be there.
I'll be easy to spot. I forgot to bring my fez in. I'll bring it in next week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right.
I'll bring that in next week. 749-B105, the first caller with the correct answer gets the family four-pack of tickets. We'll be right back. Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and congratulations to Stephanie Glancy of Cincinnati. She was the caller with the correct answer, and Tony, I'll let you explain what that definition is.
The bromeliad is considered to be, and I, like I said, not all, but most, monocarpic.
That means it only dates the same plant.
Yes, yes. Doesn't fool around with the owner's spouse or girlfriend or boyfriend. Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't have any side plants that he likes to see once in a while.
Right. little side action going on. Yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't pollinate with anybody else.
No. But monocarpic means flowering only once and then dying.
Oh,
now, the beauty of this is with the bromeliad, is just this, that when this occurs and happens, for example, the plant, the Acmea, the silver vase that Katie took home, it's starting to go into its bloom cycle, and that bloom cycle will last a long, long, long time, believe it or not. It's a beautiful plant with this pinkish bloom on it, and the foliage of that particular bromeliad has a silverish gray hue to it. Nice contrast. But once it starts to finish its bloom cycle, and it's monocarpic, it starts to grow or send out little runners, pups. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, it takes a long time for the parent plant to die off. They can live for some time, actually, but eventually it will. But the new offspring, the new pups, the beauty of it is you can break those off when there's a little bit of roots, you know, where you can determine there's roots on those and repot those, and you can start a new generation. I had a silver vase bromeliad like that where I had broken off the pups and continued the generation out for a few years.
Oh, yeah.
And it's been a long time since I've last done that, but it's really cool to do, and it's great for kids to get involved. You know, you as a parent, or if your kids like plants and so forth, and to see things like that occur and happen, the bromeliad is one of those plants that you would have a lot of fun with and carrying out those future generations from the pups that are offspring of the parent plant. It's really cool.
Sure. I like that. So congratulations going out to Stephanie Glancy. She's going to the Syrian Shrine Circus on Sunday, because the circus is February 3rd, 4th, and 5th, but she'll be there Sunday the 5th, a family four-pack. Thanks for listening.
Now, this is also a little interesting tip. You know, I've not done this, but I've heard of people doing this. You know, if you're trying to promote or force a bloom with a bromeliad, there's something that you can do that's is extremely interesting. And a lot of people, I'm sure, are not familiar with ethylene gas. But ethylene gas will promote and invoke a bloom period for some plants, not all, but some. And I've heard of people taking bromeliads and putting them in a large plastic bag, sealing it. But before they seal it, they put a couple pieces of apple in there. And as the apple starts to decompose, it gives off an ethylene gas that encourages and forces bloom.
Now, did it matter what kind of apple you put in there?
You can put a Granny Smith in there. You can put a Honeycrisp in there. You can put a Jonathan Gold in there, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, you'll do that for several to 10 days. And I just thought that was a little interesting tidbit of information.
Yeah, I like that.
And, you know, its bloom cycle truly in its natural environment, the bromeliad, is really affected by light, you know, the daylight lengths of light. Having light, obviously temperature with most plants, humidity, water, and fertilization. And I just thought it was so interesting how it relies on leaf debris, you know, in those pockets where the leaves meet the stem of the plant for fertilization. They're not heavy feeders. So if you were to pick up a bromeliad at your local garden center or nursery, and that's where you're going to find them, trust me. You know, if you want to fertilize those, I would suggest looking for a product called Neptune's Harvest Seaweed. I would use seaweed. You can use a combination of fish emulsion and seaweed, but it's very low in nitrogen and very easy on the plant, since it's really not a heavy, you know, feeder. It doesn't require a lot of fertilization. But that's really a cool thing about that plant as well.
Yeah.
And temperature range, you know, anywhere from 55 degrees to 80 is ideal. You know, it likes some of the humidity. And again, really, really important. If you pick one up, I would transplant it into a clay pot and just bump it up to the next size. And we always talk about this. When you bump up a plant to the next size pot, always go up in two-inch increments. If you have a four-inch pot or a plant, go to a six, a six to an eight. That's so important.
And how often? I mean, what determines you make that move?
You know, the size of the plant, you can see sometimes plants are obviously too big for the pot that they're in. A lot of times plants like to be a little root bound, you know, especially when it comes to some house plants.
Yeah.
But just every couple of years or so, just, you know, bump it up a little.
Size matters.
Size, it does matter. Yes. And going back to the soil, I'll leave that alone. You want to use about two-thirds of peat moss-based type blend of soil.
Okay.
With a third of sand. You need that drainage. So, so important. And like I said, just something really light in fertilization. And I love Neptune's Harvest. Their seaweed, their kelp. It's a great product. And if you like to garden on the organic side, there you go.
There
you'll find those products at your local home and garden centers.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're talking about some plants and going to get you up to date on some other great ideas because, as Tony mentioned, you know, we're only, what, 6 weeks away from the season getting underway?
Stuff's coming in. We'll talk about what's coming into the garden centers as well because I'm so excited and jacked up. You know, the seeds all arriving, and now is your opportunity to start planting.
We'll talk about that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Will be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And it's great. Tony is back. He was down in Hotlanta.
Did you miss me?
I did.
All right. Oh, Bob's great. Yeah. We're fortunate to have Bob. Bob does a great job, and as well as the staff and everyone at Bard's Nursery. So. Uh-huh. And yeah. I like this little bit that you played about you know, some of the most common mistakes that homeowners can make. Yeah. You know, not always homeowners. I've seen some professionals do some really weird things like that's out of the ordinary. That's not normal.
Of his list, I think I committed just about every one of those errors at some point or other. But,
you know, I got to tell you a funny story. Then we're going to get back to what's happening around the garden centers and so forth. Our good friend Jim Montag.
Yes.
Love Jim. And we need to have him in because he is funny as all get out. And he was telling me a story one time, and maybe he had one of those bad days, but somebody had brought back a plant to Jim, and then nothing bad. This is just funny. And it was dead. And Jim looked at it, and he said, He goes, do you think it was murder, or do you think it was suicide? Just funny stuff like that.
Yeah.
You got to like that. You got to take our industry with a little bit of humor. Yeah.
So, where the uncommon is common.
That's right. There. He does a great job there, and you will find some different things and species and so forth of all conifers and other plants. Yeah. But, you know,
what is coming into the garden centers?
What's coming into the garden centers here in the tri-state area with all of our local leaders are these items. And take advantage of the time frame and where we are at this point in time because you get the best selection when it comes to seed. Mm-hmm. If you like to sow your own seed, start all your seed inside. Now's the best selection. You know, you're not going to arrive later in April and it's like, are you already out of this? Are you out of that?
Yeah. No. I was going to ask you about that because we've talked about this in the past where people like to start seed like down in their basements and stuff. And I can remember my mom and dad doing that. So now's the time to start thinking about that?
And perfect that you brought that up.
That's why I'm
often
here.
You know, as we talk about some things that commonly occur and happen, homeowners, you know, they're chomping at the bit.
Oh, yeah.
Like all of us.
Yeah.
But starting them now is a little too early. It's very difficult to take care of plants inside, especially as they start to mature and get older and develop. They stretch for the light. They'll get kind of lanky and spindly. So, you know, it's starting the seed at the right time. A great website is Johnny's Seeds. And I don't have this in front of me, but I always reference it, you know, when I talk to people and pull it out. But they have a really nice chart based on the area that you live in. You know, we're here in the Midwest, and if you plug in our zip code, it will tell you, it tells them, or you plug in, I should say, I apologize. You plug in our average last frost date.
Okay.
And based upon your average last frost date is when you start sowing seed indoors before you take them outdoors. And it also tells you when to set it out, the set out date.
Okay.
So it's a pretty good, you know, you don't have to follow it to a T. But it's also, in addition to that, it's a great reference point, something that gives you an idea, you know, when to start thinking about doing what.
Okay. Very good.
So, you know, the seed starter kits are in. If you're looking for some of the organic seed starter soils, they're coming in. Look for things that have the OMRI certification. That's OMRI. It's the Organic Material Review Institute. So if you're looking to do things on the organic side, look for that label. Heat mats. I can't say enough how important having a source of heat underneath the trays truly, truly is. You talk about expediting the germination process. Heat mats will certainly do that, and it will help make things a lot easier. And if you have a tendency, you know, where things are positioned, some people put things up on a refrigerator or their television sets or on shelving units throughout. You know, when we water, those plastic trays and cell packs can stay wet for a long time. So having that source of heat, you know, keeps them from staying wet too long. That prolonged period of wetness can also be the detrimental element to the seed not germinating. It could rot, but it just expedites the germination process. You know, that temperature is so important. Sure. Soil temperature is sure. What it's all about. You know, pick up your trays, your clear plastic domes. Those are important. The clear plastic domes behave like a miniature greenhouse. They'll build up condensation inside, and you can just tap the lid, and the moisture will drop to the soil surface, providing a little bit of humidity and water. Pick up cell packs. You know, a lot of people like to use cell packs. Little tip. A lot of us that have garden centers, we have extra cell packs. We sell brand new, clean, sanitized cell packs that you don't have to sanitize, I should say. But we also have some used stuff that we don't always want to keep around. But if you ask for some used things, items like that, always make sure that you clean and wash them thoroughly and sanitize those. And peat pots, a lot of people like to use peat pots when they're sowing seeds and transplanting indoors.
Mm-hmm.
So those are just a few things going on in the seed world. The other element, item, pottery. Our pottery's arrived, and so have a lot of other garden centers and nurseries.
All right.
Their pottery's coming in. See what's new, the latest trends.
Let's talk about that when we come back, because there's got a couple of questions I want to ask you about the pots and the pottery. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony's melting with you.
Oh, yeah. I like that. That's good old music from back in the day.
We were talking an awful lot about plants and what's new in your local home and garden center. It's important that you go to your locally owned and operated independent garden center and check these things out. You get much, much better service. And you were about to explain the difference about the pottery. And earlier in the show, you were talking about you prefer clay pots over plastic pots. And you explained why it does that. Is the same hold true for all the pottery you use? Is that
to a degree, yes. Because the actually, when you buy glazed pottery, it is clay.
Uh-huh.
It's just it has a glazing element to it, the outside, to give it that really nice looking color. Those, you know,
it's purdy.
That's right, it's purdy. But you know, pottery is still very popular because it goes with a lot of homeowners' decor.
Sure.
And another important element about pottery, I've known this for some time, but often pottery manufacturers or distributors will argue this with me tooth and nail. And it all involves the saucer. And if someone wants to shed some light on that,
the
I like
the flying saucer?
Yeah, the flying saucer. No, the saucer that will accompany or go underneath the pot. Yeah, what it sits on.
Really?
And a lot of times, you know, the distributors, you know, I guess their salesmen are doing their job. And it's like, well, you know, a lot of people don't buy saucers. I'm like, whoa, time out. I'm here to tell you they are looking for saucers.
Sure.
Sometimes if you don't have accompanying saucers, it's a deal killer.
Right.
And I'm like, whoa, I don't like that. But you will also find that what's neat now, you're seeing a little bit more of this where the saucer is kind of built into the pot or attached to it, and it's all one piece. You know, having a saucer is very, very important because especially, you know, just in appearance itself, it looks a lot better, and it looks like everything's together. It's like wearing a suit, and you have shoes, you know?
Yeah.
It just makes it all happen.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you're inside, and, you know, if you happen to have a house plant in the kitchen on a wooden floor or linoleum floor or carpet, you know, it kind of helps catch some of the water when you water your plants. And that's not always the answer, but aesthetically and, you know, from a a functionality standpoint, too, saucers really come into play, and I think they are an important element when it comes to pottery.
Sure.
I will argue that all day long.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like clay, especially, you know, you'll see a lot of inexpensive plastic pots that are for sale often at the big box stores and other places. And there's nothing wrong with plastic. You know, don't get me wrong. I just like clay. Now, the disadvantage with clay is this. You do not want to leave it out in the winter. You know, over time, it will start to break down.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have that element of stability to where it's able to winter over two or three or four winters. So that's the only downside to it. But the huge uptake or benefit with clay, sometimes if you have a tendency to overwater, it's not going to stay wet as long. It allows the root system still to breathe. Clay breathes. It wicks moisture away from the root structure. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge benefit. And I've always found this to be true. Plants that I have had in clay, I could have identical plant species, one in plastic and one in clay. Most often, more often than not, the one in clay always outperforms the one in plastic. That's just what I've found to be true. A lot of growers will tell you that, especially when it comes to, I can tell you a plant right now that's totally different in plastic and clay, and that's the New Guinea impatient.
The New Guinea impatient.
New Guinea impatient. It's an annual that's been around for some time. But I lean towards clay. We sell a lot of clay pots.
Yeah.
You know, standard. You can buy clay pots in a standard size, and that's just your standard clay pot.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy them in 2-inch, 3-inch, 4-inch, 6-inch, 8-inch, whatever size, all the way up to 16.
Mm-hmm.
And in some cases, you might find them at 20-inch. That's a pretty good size pot.
You know, and we've been using them for thousands of years since time immemorial. when they go into caves, what do you find?
Yeah.
There's a pot.
Right. And what else is really neat about clay is that it takes on this ambiance when it ages, you know, it gets this effervescence on it, or though sometimes if they stay wet or in the right situation and conditions, though, you'll see moss growing on clay pots.
Right.
I think that gives it character. And there's a lot of customers that's like, I don't like it when there's moss on it. You know, it's like when you see copper, when copper ages, it has a neat look. But there's a lot of people like copper to have that shiny penny look,
mm-hmm.
you know, which I like it to take on that verdigris, you know, that verdigreen color.
Very pretty.
And, but I like clay pots, and I like, you know, something else that's really popular too are the clay strawberry jars. Are you familiar with those?
No.
They're jars, and they can be a foot in height to 2 foot to 3 foot, just depends. And they have all these pockets around the jar, and hence the name strawberry jars. A lot of people will plant strawberries in these jars. They have these little pockets that kind of protrude out, and as you plant this thing up, you can, you know, you're putting various plants in it. They could all be the same type of plant. A lot of people like to plant the hens and chicks in the strawberry jars. They'll do well.
Yeah.
Sedums. But I'll tell you why the strawberry jars are really a hit.
Hold that thought. And when we come back, we'll find out a little bit more about the strawberry pots and what those real benefits are. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Wembley, wembley. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've been talking a lot about plants and a lot about pots and the benefits of clay pots over plastic. And before we went into the break, we were talking about the strawberry pot. And you had me look this up. And you'd mentioned there are a lot of benefits to the strawberry pot.
Well, there's interesting things that you can do with the strawberry jar. And it's been around for a long, long, long time. And really, since the succulent craze are the smaller plants, the little itty-bitties, herbs and all that stuff have become popular, a lot of people, when they see the strawberry jars potted up with different things, they gravitate towards them. They can't keep from falling in love with this strawberry jar. So I think because of, you know, the succulents and the sedums and even some of the cactus, the younger generation is really gravitating towards these things. They love the succulent world. It's incredible. When I see the younger generation coming into the garden center, which I love and welcome, they just like different things than what some of us who are part of the older generation like, and rightfully so. So these are cool plants. These are plants a few years ago didn't really get a lot of notoriety. So
didn't recognize them as, I guess, as desirable for an
Well,
lot
it just
of
depends. You know, hence the name strawberry pot or jar. That's what people used to plant in them, strawberries. Mm-hmm. You can plant herbs. You could do the succulents and just have this really neat, unique look. And going back to the clay element, we're talking about how when as the clay gets older and ages and gets that little effervescence or that old look to it, I love that look. Especially when people bring in some of the old clay pots and say, hey, I found these in the shed. I don't want them anymore. Would you like them?
Absolutely.
I get a cart. Let me help you get those out of the car right now.
It's just, I can see you doing it.
I have.
Hold on. Oh, let me get a cart.
In some cases, I find the neatest stuff.
Yeah.
But what you can do, a little tip, especially with the strawberry jars or any clay pot, as far as that goes, if you just pick up some moss, live moss. We sell sheet moss at Jackson Florist, and you can put it in a blender, but don't use one that you cook with a lot. Maybe find an old used one. Put it in a blender, a little bit of water, a little bit of buttermilk or yogurt.
Making a little moss soup.
And what happens is, you mix this all up and take a little paintbrush and paint the moss on the outside of your pots, and eventually the moss will grow on the pot.
Did you say yogurt?
Mm-hmm. It's the yeast and the cultures that are in yogurt and the buttermilk that promote moss growth and development.
It's that old saying, you learn something new every day.
I
would have never thought about using yogurt.
Yeah, there's a number of little remedies out there or concoctions that you can come up with and do those kind of things. And getting that mossy look, that aged look, I think really adds a lot of character to the whole pot when it's planted up.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Now, on the same note about the strawberry jar, here's another little tip. Watering. So the beauty of this is if you're using succulents, they don't require a lot of water. If you're using herbs in your strawberry pot or strawberries, the plants themselves, take a piece of 3/4-inch PVC pipe.
Okay.
Drill holes in it and place it right down into the center of that jar and then put the soil around it. What we're trying to create is a tube down the center that we can pour water into, and they will seep out those drill holes that we put into the PVC tube to water that plant down low, that strawberry jar.
So what sort of, material would you put inside a strawberry jar?
Soil-wise?
Yeah, soil-wise.
Oh, we obviously want drainage, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But I always like to use the soilless mixes that are primarily peat-based. And sometimes my favorite soil mixture is using the Fertilume soil that you will find only at your local home and garden centers.
I got you.
It's in a red bag. It's called the Ultimate Potting Mix. It's a great, great mix. I always like to mix Fertilume with Garden Magic topsoil, 50-50. I have found that to be a great combination for containers, window boxes, anything I pot things in, any type of container, any type of planter. That combination in itself, they counteract and balance one another out, and I think plants do so well in that type of situation.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We've been talking a lot about plants and a lot about pots and the benefits of a ceramic pot. We have Cindy on the line from Villa Hills who has a question. Tony, we'll get to her when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, will be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, and Cindy from Villa Hills. Thanks for holding on. You got a couple of questions about bird feeders and bees?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm having an issue with honeybees invading my bird feeder almost the second we put them outside.
Oh, my gosh. I just was joking about that when we went into the break, and I said, no, the bees aren't going to be eating out of the bird feeder. That's exactly what's happening. They're invading it, huh?
Yes. We put our bird feeder out yesterday, and within 10 minutes, there had to be at least 20 little honeybees inside that bird feeder.
Well, what did you... what's in the bird seed, do you think?
Well, I've mixed two. I use the sunflower seeds, and then the big black ones, and then I don't know what it's a generic kind of bird seed, the little pellet.
Yeah, the millet and stuff.
Yeah.
So is it black oil seed
that
what you put in there? Okay.
Yeah.
Man,
you know, that's really, it's interesting. Can I ask you another question, Cindy?
Sure.
Has this happened to you before in the past, or is this just something happening now? Because
never happened to me before.
And I'm wondering, and I can't honestly answer why, but I know that things are a little mixed up right now with some of these warmer temperatures that we've been having.
Mm-hmm.
And to see bee activity this early in the season is kind of abnormal as well, not normal.
Exactly.
So, you know, they're probably in search of whatever, foraging for something. Because there obviously there aren't any plants really in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of things are lacking for the bee in itself to make it on its own. I think it has to do with the weather. Things are starting to happen. It's really out of the norm.
Well, someone had said, oh, maybe they're just looking for a warm spot. So yesterday we emptied the feeder. We kind of shooed as much of the bees away, and we emptied it. And when we hung the plain feeder with no food in it back up, a couple of them went back to it, but most of them hovered over the seed.
Right.
So I don't think it's they're looking for a place to warm. I think it's the food.
You know, I was just looking around to see if I could find an answer for you, and this beemaster.com that I just found is talking about sunflowers, and sometime those black oil sunflower seeds will produce a little bit of pollen or have pollen residue on them, so the bees in an instance like this are going to go to those seeds.
Interesting. Yeah.
And grab pollen because they're, you know, with as wet as it is, they're searching for something,
a source, right. And they're probably picking up on the pollen on the seed if that's the case.
So
really
maybe,
interesting.
Maybe if I try putting some bird seed of just the millet and leave the sunflower seed out and see what happens.
No, I wouldn't do that because the sunflower seed's just as important right now for birds as anything else because they get a lot of nutrient value from that and a source of energy from the seed.
Well, the problem is that we've been watching them and the birds don't come because the bees are there.
Yeah, if it were me, I would probably separate those and put the black oil seed in a separate feeder or just throw it out on the ground because the birds that are going to eat it are going to go to there anyway, but the ones that are afraid of the bees, the bees will go to the seed on the ground and stay out of the feeder.
Okay, separate the two then.
Yeah.
That's what I'll do then.
For the time being until the plants come up and the bees can find another source for that pollen.
Right.
I've not noticed that in my feeders. But
I've never noticed it before either. I haven't heard of anybody else that's got that problem. I don't know why I got to be the lucky one, but.
Yeah, lucky you. All right, well, Cindy, I hope that helps you.
Okay,
all
thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Good call, Ernie. I like that you found that out.
Yeah, I have noticed bees around the feeder, but I never really paid much attention to it. That was the first time I've heard that it had been an issue, you know.
Well, think about it. You know, we're in the 60s, so temperatures where things start to, you know, insect eggs start to hatch and so forth.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, as we were discussing earlier in the show, weather, temperature, average degree, growing days, it all comes into play.
Sure.
You know, and it's going to really mess Mother Nature up as we progress a little further because you know as well as I, it's going to get cold again.
Sure. You know, and we were talking about a couple of our local leaders, our friends, Ed up at Ed's Feed and Seed when we were up there and I bought that ring for peanuts for the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
Which is great. I love seeing the Blue Jays come there and feed. Unfortunately, the squirrels do also. But I got a unique little Christmas gift. It's like a Adirondack chair that has it's just a little small thing that I hung up on the post next to the bird feeder that will hold an ear of corn.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it out and hoping that the squirrels will go to that. And it is the funniest daggone thing. I got to try to catch a picture of it because the way it looks like the squirrel is sitting in the Adirondack chair feeding off of the ear of corn. But they still go up and rob that peanut thing.
Legs, his legs are crossed. He's relaxed. He's got a little end table next to him.
Cigar drink.
Yeah. A little Adirondack action. I like that.
But it is really neat to watch. I'm interested to see that. What happens with that?
I don't know. I'm glad that you found some information on the seed.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. There's an element about it that obviously draws the bees. But again, this is not normal weather that we're having, nor is it normal behavior that we're seeing bees and different things at this time of year, because there's not enough out there to sustain the bee populations that they're starting to, you know, come about and hatch.
Well, speaking of the weather, I'll throw a little Al Sleet on you today. High temperature of 65 under sunshine. Tomorrow's high temperature will be 60 to 65 again. Some showers moving in on Monday, but it will be 50. And then 50 again on Tuesday, 54, 55 on Wednesday, and then mid-40s on Thursday.
Incredible.
So, whatever you do.
You have to enjoy it and take it for what it's worth.
Yeah. Yep.
I know.
And please watch out for motorcyclists and guys and girls on scooters and bicycles, because everybody's going to seize that opportunity to get outside and enjoy it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And we were talking about pots. And you were sharing some information about the benefits of clay pots. I prefer clay pots.
Oh, I love clay pots. Yeah. Hey, you can't go wrong with clay. No. Clay... very beneficial, you know, adds a lot of character. Although some people don't like that old look to the clay pots. I'm sorry that you don't, but I think that's a wonderful look. And like I was telling you earlier, when customers say, hey, I got some clay pots in the trunk, I want to see them. Because some of the older clay pots, instead of having one drain hole, they had like five.
Right.
You know, or four, depending upon the size of the pot. Those are the good old clay pots.
I didn't know that. I'll have to start.
There are also azalea pots. There are bulb pots, clay pots. There's a lot of different clay pots. So look for clay pots. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but you'll be glad that you're using clay versus some of the plastic that's out there.
Very good. What else is going on with the local garden centers?
At the garden centers, you know, metal art is like rocking. I mean, people love those kinetic... they're like wind spinners, you know, they're on posts, you mount them into the ground, and as the wind picks up, these wind spinners turn in various directions. That's probably one of the hottest things going. Also, solar lights.
I do love those.
Everyone loves the solar lights, and we have a lot of solar lights, as well as a lot of other garden centers and nurseries throughout the tri-state, because I see a lot of these guys at the show up in Atlantic City buying these items. Mm-hmm. But in particular, the solar lights, they're on a little stake, a garden stake. You might see we're on top of these lights. It might be a flower bloom. It might be a little lantern. It might be a hummingbird or whatever type of decoration. And it's that little LED light that changes colors. One of the reasons why I think these are very, very popular is because a lot of people will take those to the cemetery. And they place them there at the gravesite. Yeah. And there's always something there for a loved one.
Always a little
light. We have fond memories of.
Sure.
There's always a little light.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Mark on the line from Loveland, and he's got a squirrel-proof feeder.
Ooh, I like it.
Yeah. What do you have, Mark?
Well, there's a series of feeders called squirrel-proof feeders.
Uh-huh.
And they make one for peanuts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I bought one. The local seed store out here in Milford is wild about birds.
Okay, yeah.
And anyway, they sell this line of squirrel-proof feeders. I've got several different ones of theirs, but last year I picked up the peanut one. The birds like it.
Yeah.
The squirrels don't.
Well,
no, just like the other squirrel-proof feeders, the weight of the squirrel shuts the opening off and keeps them from feeding on it, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'll have to check that out. Several of my three grandsons are out there in Milford, so I'm going to go watch Corey play basketball after the show today. I might have to track that place down, check it out.
Well, on 28, just to the west of 275.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty close to where we'll be. We'll be at the Union Township Civic Center here in a little while, and I'll just run right over and check that out, because I love the Blue Jays. We have about five of them that will come to the backyard, but unfortunately, you can't keep the peanuts stocked in there because the squirrels just tear them up.
And they're always working it, too.
Yeah. Well, appreciate the call, Mark. Thank you.
Have a good day.
All right. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We did get a Facebook question. You remember my friend Lena from out in Walton? She sent me a message about, and I promised her we would get out there this year to check out her backyard. It slopes downhill. Mm-hmm. And she was asking about a tree and some grasses. She wanted to know, first of all, if she decides to put some cannas down in that area, how will they do? And the other question is, let me see this real quick, about the trees.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a few questions, need some expertise. What trees can handle standing or abundant water? What happens is when it rains, it runs to the back of the yard, and she wants to put something back there to take up some space, to look great, and to maybe hopefully suck mm-hmm. up some of that water.
Well, first and foremost, you know, there are trees that will tolerate more water than others. Very few trees really want to sit in water.
Right.
Unless it's like a bald cypress or anything of the sort that can, you know, pretty much take that kind of moisture. Always, you know, going towards the red maples, they're tolerant of wet soils.
Okay.
And this all really depends, too, on how much space she has, too. You know, Bob was talking about some of those common problems mm-hmm. That homeowners make. You need to realize what every size a tree can get to.
Sure.
Or a shrub or what have you, whatever it is you want to plant. And keep that in mind over its lifetime. You know, that's just an average height that it can grow to or beyond. A tree or a shrub never quits growing until the day it dies.
Sure.
So there's an element of it. It's always growing. Obviously, service berries will tolerate some wet soil. The river birch, Betulus, they'll tolerate wet soil. Honey locust, you know, those are some trees that will tolerate some wetness, but they don't want to sit in water.
Sure.
So if she's on a hill, I'm kind of confused, unless it's at the bottom or the base.
Yeah, according to the picture, judging from the picture, uh-huh. We'll have to make a run out there. I promised her we would come out and see it.
We can do that.
Her yard slopes down and then extends out a little area. So mm-hmm. what happens is the water runs down to that hill. And
yeah.
She wants to put something back there that's going to survive.
And, you know, willows will do well in that particular site or situation. The swamp, white oak, will do well mm-hmm. in a situation like that. You know, they'll take on some water and tolerate it. But, again, if it's there for a prolonged period of time, you know, that's not always the best situation to be in. And there's also some shrubs, too, that will do well in that situation. You know, the button bush, you know, comes to mind. The chokeberries, you know, they're natives. Those come to mind. Some of the hollies, the winterberry. Just itias will take a little bit of moisture. There's some viburnums that will take some moisture. Mm-hmm. So there's a number of things that you can do. However, not many of the grasses, you know, you had mentioned grasses, mm-hmm. like to sit in water.
Right. Okay.
You know, some sedges will take a little bit of moisture, but they're not like your tall grasses.
Sure. I will, I'll send some of that information to her and tell her we'll get out there and take a look at that in the coming weeks. The other part of her question was, is it okay to plant a tree if she finds something that'll work now?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's perfect out there, with the exception, right now, it's a little wet. Because when you dig, you're going to have big clods and clumps of soil that's not going to break apart.
Mm-hmm.
So allow it to dry out a little bit. That's right. So important, because we've had a lot of moisture, which has been a good thing, because, you know, a lot of our trees that have been struggling that needed that moisture, it's there.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times we go through those prolonged periods of dry spells in the summer months. And also our conifers. This is really good. So it's not that bad. But refrain from digging and planting when it's too wet.
Sure. Because when you're going to pack it right back in there, it'll eventually act mm-hmm. like it's going to choke it. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We've been covering a lot of ground today. Tony's back from Hotlanta and with new great ideas and a new plant of the week.
Yeah. It was in a newsletter this week, too.
Yeah.
The bromeliad. I love the bromeliad. It's been around for some time. Often overlooked.
Not a bromeliad.
It's a bromeliad. And it's a great plant, you know. It's very unique. It's monocarpic. We were talking about that earlier. That meaning it will only flower once and will eventually die off. However, there's an uptick or an upside to this that it will spawn off or produce new little offshoots, mm-hmm. pups, and you can plant those at some point in time and continue the generations on forward.
I like that.
So the bromeliads, they're available and come in an array of different colors. If you go out to our Facebook page, you'll see where I've taken some photos of those I have in the garden center. Just to give you an idea of, you'll see that some are yellow on the tips, some are maroon, some are orange. The one that Katie picked up the other day, the Acmea variety, it's called Silver Vase. It gets that pink bloom inside it, and it's stunning. It blooms for a long, long time. And the old way of thinking, a lot of misconceptions from a time ago that a lot of people seem to think that bromeliads were difficult to take care of, not for the novice, only for the experienced, the furthest from the truth. They're very adaptable. They're easy to take care of inside. And they are an epiphyte type of plant. And when I say that, what I mean is that the plant itself, typically in its natural environment, will grow on another plant, but is not parasitic. So it does not exploit or live off of another plant in a bad way.
Doesn't have any side plant action.
No side plant action. You're right.
And there's also an interesting way to water these
Yes. And now the fact that, you know, in their natural environment, mm-hmm. you know, they typically, you know, they will host or they will live on another plant mm-hmm. and their root systems are typically exposed.
Okay.
They get some moisture in through the root system, but not the majority of the moisture that they need or require when they, in fact, are thirsty. A lot of times in the rainforest, the way that the plant's structure is shaped, and it's really cool how plants adapt and how they go about getting their water and their food, like mm-hmm. us humans. But the leaves are shaped in such a way they capture rainwater, in addition to leaf debris that might fall from trees above. And that rainwater satisfies their you know, their thirst. And the leaf debris comes into play with a form of a nutritional element, fertilization.
Okay.
So it's kind of really cool how this plant really behaves in its natural environment. And the fact that it's so adaptable, I mean, we can grow them. We know that we can grow them in pots, but we need to provide the right amount of drainage. You know, the soil that's conducive to where it drains well and it doesn't sit in water, because wet feet can very easily and quickly be their demise.
Sure.
So, you know, something like 2/3 part of a peat moss-based soil with 1/3 of sand mixed together, that should be adequate enough to provide for really good drainage. Really a cool plant.
Love that. Love that. And you can jump onto our Facebook page and check out some beautiful pictures, photos of it, and it does come in some pretty cool colors.
Yeah, and yeah, the other little interesting tidbit fact that I found out about it, and I've heard of people doing this, is if you want to try and force them to go into bloom, an interesting way of doing it. It's been known that people will take a bromeliad and put it in a large plastic bag, mm-hmm. and they'll also cut up pieces, slices of apple, and place in there along with it. The purpose of the apple is, as it starts to decompose, it gives off an ethylene gas that promotes bloom. And you'll do that for about 7 to 10 days.
Nice.
So very interesting. Yeah. But I don't think I would go that route unless I really had to meet some sort of a deadline and you need to be in the bloom.
And needed
just
it. You're having a party.
Let them do their thing. Right. Yes. But a very cool plant. It was in a newsletter this week. And also, like Ernie said, you can check it out on our Facebook page.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we are going to be going around the table. We'll be right back.
With the rain in my shoes.
Yeah, it's everywhere. It's been raining like a monsoon season.
That was for me, John?
Yeah.
Oh,
little Elvis.
Little Elvis. Yeah, like Elvis.
Yeah. 749-B105, and a feature that Tony introduced a couple of weeks ago called In and Around the Table, and of course, we love being around the table.
It's a little grilling action right here.
Yeah, well, I'm known for that.
Yes, I know you are. I say that facetiously because the last time I saw you at a grill, it was a photograph, and you had white legs, and I've seen a better pair of legs than a bucket of chicken. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Our friend Bob Bard was in last week for you when you were in Atlanta, and he posed the same question. He wanted to talk a little bit about grilling.
Yeah.
He goes, so, you love grilling, don't you? And I said, I love eating. My wife does the grilling. Tony always gives me grief about it.
Grilling's big, I've been experimenting more. So the part of this whole new segment, around the table is about a number of things. It could be things that we grow out in the garden and bring to the table and whip it up in some fashion. If it's on a grill or if it's in the oven or if it's in a skillet, you name it. If it's around the table, we're going to eat it.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm in.
All right. Who doesn't like guacamole? I love guacamole.
Holy guacamole. Who doesn't like it?
There's a huge benefit to the avocado. It's very healthy to eat. It's the good fat.
Mm-hmm.
But I ran across this recipe. Really tasty, by the way. A little different, too. And I was a little apprehensive about doing this because, working with the avocado, it's a little soft. Unless it's really ripe, it can be really soft and hard to work with.
Yeah.
But this is a recipe called grilled guacamole. All right.
Okay.
And this is kind of like the rundown. 3 Roma tomatoes, 4 ripe Hass. You got to have Hass.
Hass.
Got to
say it like that, too.
That's right. Cut into half-inch slices. That's why this is important, because they have to be thick enough to go on a grill for a short amount of time.
That's how I would have done it.
Right. 1 red onion.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Half-inch slices as well.
Right.
1 jalapeno pepper. Halved and seeded.
Mm-hmm.
1 tablespoon of fresh lime juice. I kind of beefed it up. I like lime juice.
Do you?
Use fresh lime juice. Use squeezed lime juice.
Yeah.
Don't buy it in that little green bottle. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Buy a couple of those Mexican limes. They're juicy. And 1 garlic clove minced. 1 tablespoon of chopped cilantro. Who doesn't like cilantro? And as a matter of fact, did I tell you about that Costa Rican cilantro I bought at Biggs?
No, you did not.
Or not at Biggs. At General Gems. Awesome.
Yeah.
But anyway, you need 1 tablespoon of chopped cilantro, 3/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/2 teaspoon of ground cumin, and 1/8 of a teaspoon of cayenne pepper. Little kick right there. Keeps the squirrels off. All right. Here's the method. All right. Preheat your grill to around 400, give or take.
Okay.
Place the tomatoes, the avocados, red onion, jalapenos directly over heat. All right. Turning only once, just until they char or start to soften.
Okay.
And, it could be 4 or 5 minutes. That's why I was a little leery of this. Very tasty, though. Make sure that your avocados are thick. All right?
Right.
Always, too, this is really important. Always oil your grates so things don't stick to the grates.
Good idea.
I can't say that enough.
What kind of oil do you use?
Just use a Wesson oil.
A Wesson oil.
A vegetable oil.
All right.
Yes. Always, always, always. Then once you turn it once, just as they start to char, remove the vegetables from the grill and start chopping them up, okay? Combine everything into a small bowl. Add the lime juice, the garlic, the cilantro, salt, and cumin, a little bit of cayenne. And you can kind of, some people like their guacamole to be whippy in a way. I like for it to have a little bit of chunky action to it.
Okay.
So you can mix it up however you want, whatever you deem necessary, and whatever it is that's liking to your taste buds.
I like it so far.
You can serve it, let it cool down a little bit at room temperature, or you can chill it if you like.
Mm-hmm.
But the blue corn chips I like, and just it's that and a good old beer with a lime in it.
Yum, yum.
Yummy. And you can taste a little bit of that. You get that grilled flavor to it.
Okay.
Grilled guacamole.
Is this the Tony recipe?
No. And I'm glad you asked. This is from a book that I picked up called Fire and Smoke.
Oh.
Fire and Smoke. Where there's smoke, there's fire.
We'll get that info.
Where there's fire,
on
there
our
better
Facebook.
Be smoke.
And check out our Facebook page, In and Around the House Facebook page. In a few minutes, we'll have that up there for you.
We will. That's a lot of typing.
John's pretty good.
John's quick. Okay. Sometimes I think it's easier to take a photo of the recipe and then put it in.
Well, see, now you know his shortcut.
Any shortcuts. That's right. But, try it. Okay. So, and also, we were talking a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
Little teaser here. Was in touch with Molly Wellman.
Ooh.
Okay.
Yeah.
She's the author of Handcrafted Cocktails. She's local.
Uh-huh.
And she's agreed to come on and talk about her book and some other goody kind of items. And I'm looking forward to that. Just a little update for you.
All right. And that sounds like an in and around the house road trip.
That's right. Drinks for morning, noon, night.
We're in. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Talking a lot about the plants and the weather. It is unseasonably warm, to say the least. We'll tell you some other things you need to look out for regarding the weather when we come back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And there's always seems to be something that just is getting under your skin, so to speak. But we have heard this a couple of times. Mice are an issue right now.
Yeah. You know, just recently I was talking with some friends and they're like, yeah, I'm having issues with mice and our house is clean or it's this and it's that. Well, there's a lot of things that come into play. You know, are you near a woodland type of area? Is it wide open? Do you feed the birds a lot with seed? Because they'll gravitate towards all those kind of things as well.
Yeah.
And what you're doing, you're inviting mice. Is your house sealed up that well or isn't it? You know, are there a lot of gaps? Are there a lot of areas where mice can get in? Do you leave your garage door open often or a lot?
Mm-hmm.
You know, all those things come into play. Are trees, you know, Bob was talking about this, planting trees too close to your house. Guess what? That tree becomes a ladder. Then all of a sudden, you'll have insects that just walk up the tree and get on the roof and start getting into the house.
Oh, yeah.
Squirrels, mice, you name it. But, you know, we all like the mouse, too. We all like Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse and Mighty Mouse. Remember Mighty Mouse?
Yeah.
You need a big trap for Mighty Mouse.
Yes, you do.
But, you know, trapping mice using those food baiting systems where they eat the green stuff and go somewhere and have to get a drink of water. That kind of works on that in their intestinal system, and then they just go off and die somewhere. Something else that works really, really, really well, believe this or not, and I'm a firm believer of it because I can attest to it personally, is Bonite's Mouse Magic.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and all it is are little sachets of like peppermint and spearmint. And if you don't believe me, try it. And I want you to place some traps around that little sachet of peppermint and spearmint, and you'll see that nothing happens. Nothing goes to that trap. It does deter mice. A lot of people use mouse magic in their campers when they seal them up at the end of the season, going into the winter months. When they cover their boats, winter those over. People put them in their cupboards or pantries. It really works. So, and the old saying is, they say if you have one mouse,
there's
10. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and you know, our great friend Margie Bushman from Bushman Supply. We talk about garage doors all the time. Look at that astracle underneath the door, the rubber seal.
Mm-hmm.
If you ever see that gnawed on or chewed on, that's an indicator that you might have some, you know, issues with mice.
Some unwanted guests.
That's right. And I was talking to a friend the other day, and he's like, yeah, we had a newer plastic garbage can. All of a sudden, there's a hole in the bottom of it where they just gnawed into it. You know, it's how do you take care of your trash when you take it out into the garage or wherever it is that you keep it? So these guys have been around a lot longer than we have. So like it or not, we got to coexist, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, there's one calling you now. Come in, Ernie. But try it. Bonite's Mouse Magic. It does work. Try it.
Yeah.
Look for it at your local garden centers and nurseries. As hokey as that sounds, it does work.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Make sure you take the time to jump onto our Facebook page and check out the plants that Tony's posted on there, and also stay connected with us there.
Yeah, and if you want to catch a past show, there's podcasts from past shows.
Mm-hmm.
If you check us out on Facebook, I don't want to sound conceited or anything or in love with ourselves or myself. You got to like us, right? You got to like us. Like us.
Right.
Like us on Facebook.
Right. 749-B105. Give us a call if you have any questions. But we talked earlier in the show, this bears repeating, the winter seeding issue. We always have people who ask about that. And one of the things they usually ask about is, I want to get this seed down. And if it does snow, then it'll work its way into the ground. You might be thinking that, oh, this is moisture, that everything's nice and soggy. I'll put the seed down. It'll work its way into the soil. That's not what you want to happen right now.
Not in the least.
Yeah.
Right now, the ground is saturated. Just take a look at some of the tributaries and the streams and the Licking River in particular, and the Ohio River. They're full of water, and it's flowing. So is the ground. It's saturated. It's not the time to get out on the lawn and walk on it, because you're going to end up with soil compaction. Stay off of it. And also, postpone it. Put it off, your winter seeding. The best time to do it's in February, mid-February, the latter part of February. And right now, even if we were in February with these kind of temperatures, it's in the moisture.
Sure.
It's still not good, because as long as the seed sits in a dormant state and it stays wet for a prolonged period of time, you risk it decaying, rotting. Mm-hmm. So therefore, it's not going to be as productive or as beneficial as you would like for it to be.
You know, I have a great way for you to remember that is Valentine's Day. When you go to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and florist to pick up flowers for your significant other,
right?
Pick yourself up some seed.
But on the flip side, if the temperatures were normal and we're having and experiencing one of those normal winters, winter seeding, dormant seeding can be a huge benefit. It really can. And the beauty of it is, as the temperatures fluctuate, you know, we go through the freezing and thawing cycles, you know, that opens the ground up. You know, the seed settles in and it protects it. And it will lie there in a dormant stage until the ground temperatures warm up well enough for germination. And if like I say it all the time, if the planets are all in alignment, it's a wonderful time to sow seed. It's really the second best time to sow seed.
When the moon is in the seventh house.
Yes, or in Ernie's house.
And Jupiter aligns with Mars.
Yes. So the chronological order of sowing seed for the lawn, grass seed, is fall, winter, spring, and then summer's least desirable. Not that you can't pull it off,
right?
But you'll be watering a lot.
There is a new seed that's going to be available too this year, and we'll talk about that when we come back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And you may be, I guess, chomping at the bit and thinking sunshine, 60-degree temperature in January. I need to run out into the lawn and do some seeding. Don't do it. Don't get out there. It's too mushy. You're going to do more damage than good. But when the time comes, there's a new product available.
There is. And this introduction is from our good friends from Central Farm and Garden. And if you're so familiar with the tall fescue grass turf that we talk about often, Fine Lawn Elite, they've improved it. And now you are going to find it at your local garden centers and nurseries, and it's called Fine Lawn H2O. So the beauty of this is it's been hybridized and developed into a better seed that's going to use less moisture. And that's going to be a huge benefit, you know, especially with water conservation today. It's so important. And just this past summer, you know, all the people out in California, there were watering restrictions. There were some people out there that were just starting to put artificial turf into the front yards just to have a turf look.
Yeah.
Down in Georgia and going into the southeast, you know, there was a severe drought. So water conservation is of the utmost importance right now today, and ever more so in the future, because, you know, if we're starting to go through these drought situations and prolonged periods of, you know, a lack of precipitation, having a turf that can tolerate a little bit of that and use less water or require less water up to 40%. Now, again, not 40%, up to.
Okay.
That's a huge benefit. And, you know, there's a lot of scrutiny now going on with people using water in a non-essential way, you know, like you hosing your bike off every day. You can just do it once a week.
Yeah.
Those kind of things. You know, if you're at the kitchen sink, don't run your water continuously. You only run it when you need to.
Sure.
All those things are so, so important. And the beauty of Fine Lawn H2O is, again, it's going to use less water. It's going to take less fertilization and less chemicals. So that in itself is awesome. And you're still going to get that great looking lawn. You know, it's going to exhibit all those traits that Fine Lawn Elite has brought us for so many years. You know, it's a durability, it's wearability, it's, you know, that nice deep green colored look. So you're not going to lose any of that. And what else is interesting, there's an organization, and you can go out and check this out, as a matter of fact.
Check it out.
It's on the website, www.tgwca.org, and that's the Turf Grass Water Conservation Alliance. They just recently approved of Fine Lawn H2O to be, you know, just what it's touted to be now, you know, less water dependent. And that is huge. It really, really is. And I think it's remarkable that they're evolving. And it's something worth looking at. So when you get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, we're carrying it. I'm telling you, and that's the only place you're going to find it. Fine Lawn H2O.
749-B105 and Around the House with Tony and Ernie. Tony, we have Jim on the line from Springdale who's got a question about this. What is the best weed and seed on the market? Jim, do you have a big area to try to cover, or you?
Well, I got my whole front yard, and my joke is I got a lot of ivy in it. And if I got rid of the ivy, I think, or the clover, whatever it is, I wouldn't have any green.
You sure it's not?
In there and get rid of all that.
There's a lot of truth to that. And there's a lot of people that think just what you're saying. Although it's not what I would desire to have, it's green nonetheless.
It might be that creeping Charlie that's infested the same thing that's in my yard. Did it get a little bloom on it?
Yeah, a little bit, like some purple stuff.
Yeah, it's a bluish bloom.
Yep.
Yeah.
The best way to go after it, you have two approaches, and right now is not the ideal time to do it. You know, we need to, for things to be actively growing for the most part, and we also need temperatures to be consistently, you know, fertile, and we'll say for a weed-free zone that it will work in the 40s, but I like to notch it up a little bit and say 50s, and we can rule out still the temperature being too cool. But, you know, you can go after it with a selective herbicide, and that would be weed-free zone. And it's best to go after, just you were talking about the common ground cover, and if, in fact, it has that scalloped-shaped leaf, that's a key identifier. And also, if it gets a little blue bloom in the spring, that's another key identifier. That is one, that really, there's two times to go after that where it's vulnerable. And one is in the spring, just as it's in bloom or finished blooming, because it's exerting a lot of its energy in the bloom stage. The second best time to go after it is in the fall, just before it starts to go dormant somewhat, and it translocates all of its energy down into its root structure. It takes the product in better, and it's more efficient.
And then, I guess what you're looking for is, once you get rid of that, what's the best seed to put down?
Well, the best seed, I'm going to take you right to Fine Lawn Elite or Fine Lawn H2O, and you can use it straight up, or you can blend it with a couple of other tall fescues. But I also want to touch base on, I told you there's two methods of getting rid of your unwanted weeds.
Yeah.
The second one is this. And I try and ask homeowners when I'm, you know, talking with them in the garden center, I want to get a rough idea. You know, if we were to look at the lawn from a percentage standpoint, how much of it is weeds, do you think, and how much of it is turf? And if you're over 50% unwanted broadleaf weeds and other grassy weeds, I'm gonna lead you into a direction of doing a total kill with a non-selective herbicide like Roundup or Killzall, and start new. Now, if you think you have to do that, really the best time to do that is going to be late in the summer, and then be ready to turn the corner at the beginning of September and sow grass seed. That's where you will get your best results. Now, you can certainly try that in the spring as well. It might take a little bit more effort, but it can still be done nonetheless. A third option as well, and down and dirty, this is easy to do as well, kill everything. And if, you know, if the scope of the project's within where it's doable, it's not something quite large. Our good friend Turpin at Turpin Sod Farm, yeah, sod's pretty inexpensive for what you get, and it's an instant effect. and it doesn't take long for it to root in. So that's another option as well.
Yeah, I thought about that. If I went the sod route, would I like, I don't know, I'm stupid.
No, not at all.
Fill everything up, and go by sod? Or
well, you could
over the top of what's there?
Well, you want to kill the turf that's there. Okay, because the main objective is to kill what's underneath so we can, when we roll the sod out, that the root system under the sod makes good connection or connectivity to the soil below. But when you kill everything, you're going to need to rake that out and loosen the soil up. And then I always encourage people, too, to use a starter fertilizer on the bare ground and then roll your sod out. I will tell you this. There were some areas that I worked on with sod this past fall. And it is beautiful right now. It took root, and I got it over at Turpin Farms.
That may be the way to go because I don't have a lot of time to do other things.
And, you know, it's all about preparation, and feel free to call anytime or send us an email. We can step you through it. And it's just getting rid of what's there, grading it out, making sure that the soil's loose, a little bit of starter fertilizer, roll it out, pin it down. If you need to pin it down, if it's on a grade, and you're there. I use the sod.
That's like the way to go.
Yeah. Either way, I know I said a lot, and I may have overwhelmed you with too much information, but certainly it's doable in either of the three approaches.
And take pictures along the way and send them to us or post them on Facebook on our page. We'd love to follow along and help out when we can.
Yeah, I think I'll do it. Well, you guys both know me, so.
Uh-huh.
You know this is Ernie.
Yeah, I do. Oh, all right, brother. We will. We'll be in touch. If you have any other questions, just let us know.
Absolutely. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thank you.
I got a message just a moment ago. Someone was asking me if in fact a tree was damaged at the top or the tip at the leader, what would happen? What typically happens? It doesn't stunt the tree. But you'll get a multiple of new growth or leaders or branches starting to come out at that one spot where the cut is or the break is. Yeah. And what you're going to have to do is cut two or three, whatever comes up, and try and train one of those leaders to be the central leader.
Okay.
So you're trying to reestablish that again. So in essence, it doesn't stunt the growth of the tree. We just need to start watching it, how it behaves and responds, and cut out the necessary branches or stems to allow for one leader to regain that that role. To be the leader of that tree.
749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And we've talked about a lot of things, the grass, the trees, preparation. Stay off the ground right now because it's just so saturated. Sunshine, warm temperatures, the perfect day for you to get out and visit your locally owned, independently operated garden center, florist. And earlier in the show, Tony was talking about seed starting. And this is a great time for you to start looking around, getting some supplies ready, and get it done.
Yeah, and don't jump the gun. Just map it out.
Yeah.
And this is the perfect time of year to stick your nose in some periodicals. You know, when I say that, I'm talking about magazines for the most part because they're easy reading. You can sit down in one sitting and cover a couple of different topics or articles. And, you know, get ideas. Start mapping it out. Write down your ideas. And most importantly, I know Bob from Barge Nursery covered this last week. If you're looking to do some new landscape design, or if you have a new home and you're designing for the very first time, or you're revamping your landscape, take photographs, take measurements, and put it down on graph paper. And the beauty of that is, when you put it down on graph paper by the actual measurement size, you can start drawing out your plans, your layouts, based upon the type of shrubs and trees that you're interested in planting and perennials. And you'll get a really good representation of what things can look like. And when I say check out the information on the plant, tree, or shrub that you're interested in, that's just an average height that it can grow to and an average width. So allow things room to grow because you don't want to take it out.
Sure. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Teresa on the line from Ludlow. Tips to fixing a mud yard from a puppy. Boy, you have got some challenges.
Oh, yes. I put two bales of hay down to try to stop her from... Now she's started digging, too. Okay. So
And how old is she?
She's about 5 months.
Okay. Boy, you're just going to have to bite the bullet for a while till she grows out of this part, because it's just in their nature to mm-hmm. dig and to run and to romp. And I'm taking from Ludlow, you have a fenced-in yard?
Yes.
Okay. So it's going to, you know, it's going to probably go along the fences and mark territories so that other dogs that come by pick up these messages. And with all of the rain and the saturated soil right now, you're just going to have to wait a few more weeks.
Well, you can't even tell I put hay down out in the middle. I mean, I've even spread it back out. It's like going into the ground or something. It's just, I don't think I'm going to have any grass come this spring and stuff.
You know,
it's already, you can't tell I have even had grass.
I'm just curious, how large is, what's the size of your yard, the fenced-in area?
Oh, it's not very big. It's, I don't know how big it is. It's not very big, though.
You know, this might be something of interest to you. I kind of balked at it originally when I heard this. We have a really good customer that comes into the garden center. And just like your situation, she was always mopping the kitchen. You know, every time
I have to wipe her down. And I keep towels by the back door just so I can wipe her down because she's so muddy.
Well,
she loves the dirt.
This is an option. And from what I know and from what I gather, has been very, very beneficial. This customer I'm talking about, she had somebody come in and install artificial turf in her area. And it was a small area. And she said it has helped tremendously. Kind of like what you would see over at Riverbend up in the old grassy area that used to become the mud pit if you had a lot of rain. So that might be something just worth looking into. Again, I've not personally done it, nor have I have experience with it. Just kind of passing along what I've heard.
Yeah.
But, good.
I like what Ernie said, I think, or somebody, about just waiting it out.
Yeah.
But I might have to put another bale of hay down.
Yeah, you're able to do that in a time, for the time being. There's no doubt about it. Good luck to you.
The rain is not stopping anytime soon.
Like. Well, snap a photo of the little girl and send it to us. We'd like to see her.
She's a Great Dane puppy.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
you have got your challenge.
Yeah, your hands are full now. You just opened up a can of worms there.
Best of luck with that, sister.
I did. She's a sweetheart, though.
All right, thanks for the call.
All right,
thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be back next week. Have a great weekend. Enjoy this beautiful weather.